Chapter 99. Do you consider this a swamp, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired Jollop gravely. Why yes, sir, apostrophe returned Mark. I haven't a doubt about it myself. Apostrophe, the sentiment is quite European, apostrophe said the major, and does not surprise me. What would your English million say to such a swamp in England, sir? Apostrophe apostrophe, they'd say it was an uncommon nasty one, I should think, said Mark, and that they would rather be inoculated for fever in some other way. Apostrophe, European. Apostrophe apostrophe, remarked Jollop, with sardonic pity. Quite European. Apostrophe, and there he sat. Silent and cool, as if the house were his, smoking away like a factory chimney. Mr. Jollop was, of course, one of the most remarkable men in the country, but he really was a notorious person besides. He was usually described by his friends, in the South and West, as a splendid sample of our nutty raw material, sir, apostrophe and was much esteemed for his devotion to rational liberty, for the better propagation whereof he usually carried a brace of revolving pistols in his coat pocket, with 7 barrels apiece. He also carried, amongst other trinkets, a sword stick, which he called his tickler. Apostrophe and a great knife, which, for he was a man of a pleasant turn of humor, he called Ripper, apostrophe in allusion to its usefulness as a means of ventilating the stomach of any adversary in a close contest. He had used these weapons with distinguished effect in several instances, all duly chronicled in the newspapers, and was greatly beloved for the gallant manner in which he had jobbed out the eye of one gentleman, as he was in the act of knocking at his own street door. Mr. Jollop was a man of a roving disposition, and, in any less advanced community, might have been mistaken for a violent vagabond. But his fine qualities being perfectly understood and appreciated in those regions, where his lot was cast, and where he had many kindred spirits to consort with, he may be regarded as having been born under a fortunate star, which is not always the case with a man, so much before the age in which he lives. Preferring, with a view to the gratification of his tickling and ripping fancies, to dwell upon the outskirts of society, and in the more remote towns and cities, he was in the habit of emigrating from place to place, and establishing in each some business, usually a newspaper which he presently sold, for the most part closing the bargain by challenging, stabbing, pistoling, or gouging the new editor, before he had quite taken possession of the property. He had come to Eton on a speculation of this kind, but had abandoned it, and was about to leave. He always introduced himself to strangers as a worshipper of freedom, was the consistent advocate of lynch law and slavery, and invariably recommended, both in print and speech, the tarring and feathering of any unpopular person who differed from himself. He called this planting the standard of civilization in the wilder gardens of my country. Apostrophe, there is little doubt that Jollop would have planted this standard in Eton at Mark's expense, in return for his plainness of speech, for the genuine freedom is dumb, save when she vaunts herself, but for the utter desolation and decay prevailing in the settlement, and his own approaching departure from it. As it was, he contented himself with showing Mark one of the revolving pistols, and asking him what he thought of that weapon. It ain't long since I shot a man down with that, sir, in the state of Illinois, apostrophe observed Jollop. Did you, indeed? Apostrophe apostrophe said Mark, without the smallest agitation. Very free of you. And very independent. Apostrophe, I shot him down, sir, apostrophe pursued Jollop, for asserting in the Spartan Portico, a tri-weekly journal, that the ancient Athenians went ahead of the present Locofoco ticket. Apostrophe, and what's that? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Mark. European not to know, apostrophe said Jollop, smoking placidly. European quite. Apostrophe apostrophe, after a short devotion to the interests of the magic circle, he resumed the conversation by observing. You won't half feel yourself at home in Eden now? No, said Mark, I don't. You miss the impists of your country. You miss the house news? Observed Chollop. And the houses rather, said Mark. No window news here, sir, observed Chollop. And no windows to put them on, said Mark. No stakes, no dungeons, no blocks, no racks, no scaffolds, no thumbscrews, no pikes, no pillories, said Chollop. Nothing but revolvers and bowie knives, returned Mark. And what are they? Not worth mentioning. The man who had met them on the night of their arrival, came crawling up at this juncture, and looked in at the door. Well, sir, said Chollop. How do you get along? He had considerable difficulty in getting along at all, and said as much in reply. Mr. Company. And me, sir, observed Chollop, are disputating a piece. He ought to be slicked up pretty smart to disputate between the old world and the new, I do expect. Well. Returned the miserable shadow. So he had. I was merely observing, sir, said Mark, addressing this new visitor, that I looked upon the city in which we have the honor to live, as being swampy. What's your sentiments? I opinionate it's moist perhaps, at certain times, returned the man. But not as moist as England, sir. Cried Chollop, with a fierce expression in his face. Oh, not as moist as England, let alone its institutions, said the man. I should hope there ain't a swamp in all America, as don't whip that small island into mush and molasses, observed Chollop, decisively. You bought slick, straight, and right away, of scatter, sir? To Mark. He answered in the affirmative. Mr. Chollop winked at the other citizen. Scatter is a smart man, sir. He is a rising man. He is a man as will come up arts, right side up, sir. Mr. Chollop winked again at the other citizen. He should have his right side very high up, if I had my way, said Mark. As high up as the top of a good tall gallows, perhaps. Mr. Chollop was so delighted at the smartness of his excellent countryman, having been too much for the Britisher, and at the Britisher's resenting it, that he could contain himself no longer, and broke forth in a shout of delight. But the strangest exposition of this ruling passion was in the pestilence-stricken, broken, miserable shadow of a man who derived so much entertainment from the circumstance, that he seemed to forget his own ruin in thinking of it, and laughed outright when he said that Scatter was a smart man, and had drawn a lot of British capital that way, as sure as sun up. After a full enjoyment of this joke, Mr. Hannibal Chollop sat smoking and improving the circle, without making any attempts either to converse, or to take leave, apparently laboring under the not uncommon delusion, that for a free, and enlightened citizen of the United States, to convert another man's house into a spittoon for 2 or 3 hours together, was a delicate attention, full of interest and politeness, of which nobody could ever tire. At last he rose. I am a going easy, he observed. Mark entreated him to take particular care of himself. Afore I go, he said sternly, I have got a little word to say to you. You are darnation cute, you are. Mark thanked him for the compliment. But you are much too cute to last. I can't conceive of any spotted painter in the bush, as ever was so riddled through and through as you will be, I bet. What for? Asked Mark. We must be cracked up, sir, retorted Chollop, in a tone of menace. You are not now in a despotic land. We are a model to the earth, and must be just cracked up, I tell you. What? I speak too free, do I? Cried Mark. I have drawn upon a man, and fired upon a man for less, apostrophe said Jollop, frowning. I have known strong men obliged to make themselves uncommon scase for less. I have known men lynched for less, and beaten into punkin sarse for less, by an enlightened people. We are the intellect and virtue of the earth, the cream of human matter, and the flower of moral force. Our backs is easier is. We must be cracked up, or they rises, and we snarls. We shows our teeth, I tell you, fierce. You'd better crack us up, you had. Apostrophe, after the delivery of this caution, Mr. Jollop departed, with Ripper, Tickler, and the revolvers, all ready for action on the shortest notice. Come out from under the blanket, sir, apostrophe said Mark, he's gone. What's this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he added softly, kneeling down to look into his partner's face, and taking his hot hand. What's come of all that chattering and swaggering? He's wandering in his mind tonight, and don't know me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Martin indeed was dangerously ill, very near his death. He lay in that state many days, during which time Mark's poor friends, regardless of themselves, attended him. Mark, fatigued in mind and body, working all the day and sitting up at night, worn with hard living, and the unaccustomed toil of his new life, surrounded by dismal and discouraging circumstances of every kind, never complained or yielded in the least degree. If ever he had thought Martin selfish or inconsiderate, or had deemed him energetic only by fits and starts, and then too passive for their desperate fortunes, he now forgot it all. He remembered nothing but the better qualities of his fellow wanderer, and was devoted to him, heart and hand. Many weeks elapsed before Martin was strong enough to move about with the help of a stick and Mark's arm, and even then his recovery, for want of wholesome air and proper nourishment, was very slow. He was yet in a feeble and weak condition when the misfortune he had so much dreaded fell upon them. Mark was taken ill. Mark fought against it, but the malady fought harder, and his efforts were in vain. Floored for the present, sir, apostrophe he said one morning, sinking back upon his bed, but jolly. Apostrophe, apostrophe, floored indeed, and by a heavy blow, as anyone but Martin might have known beforehand. If Mark's friends had been kind to Martin and they had been they were 20 times kinder to Mark. And now it was Martin's turn to work, and sit beside the bed and watch, and listen through the long, long nights, to every sound in the gloomy wilderness, and hear poor Mr. Tapley, in his wandering fancy, playing at skittles in the Dragon, making love remonstrances to Mrs. Lupin, getting his sea legs on board the Screw, traveling with old Tom Pinch on English roads, and burning stumps of trees in Eden, all at once. But whenever Martin gave him drink or medicine, or tended him in any way, or came into the house returning from some drudgery without, the patient Mr. Tapley brightened up and cried, I'm jolly, sir, I'm jolly. Apostrophe, apostrophe, now, when Martin began to think of this, and to look at Mark as he lay there, never approaching him by so much as an expression of regret, never murmuring, always striving to be manful and staunch, he began to think, how was it that this man who had had so few advantages was so much better than he who had had so many? And attendance upon a sick bed, but especially the sick bed of one whom we have been accustomed to see in full activity and vigor, being a great breeder of reflection, he began to ask himself in what they differed. He was assisted in coming to a conclusion on this head by the frequent presence of Mark's friend, their fellow passenger across the ocean, which suggested to him that in regard to having aided her, for example, they had differed very much. Somehow he coupled Tom Pinch with this train of reflection, and thinking that Tom would be very likely to have struck up the same sort of acquaintance under similar circumstances, began to think in what respects two people so extremely different were like each other, and were unlike him. At first sight there was nothing very distressing in these meditations, but they did undoubtedly distress him for all that. Martin's nature was a frank and generous one, but he had been bred up in his grandfather's house, and it will usually be found that the meaner domestic vices propagate themselves to be their own antagonists. Selfishness does this especially, so do suspicion, cunning, stealth, and covetous propensities. Martin had unconsciously reasoned as a child, my guardian takes so much thought of himself, that unless I do the like by myself, I shall be forgotten. Apostrophe so he had grown selfish. But he had never known it. If anyone had taxed him with the vice, he would have indignantly repelled the accusation, and conceived himself unworthily aspersed. He never would have known it, but that being newly risen from a bed of dangerous sickness, to watch by such another couch, he felt how nearly self had dropped into the grave, and what a poor dependent, miserable thing it was. It was natural for him to reflect he had months to do it in upon his own escape, and Mark's extremity. This led him to consider which of them could be the better spared, and why. Then the curtain slowly rose a very little way, and self, 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 was shown below. He asked himself, besides, when dreading Mark's decease, as all men do and must, at such a time, whether he had done his duty by him, and had deserved, and made a good response to his fidelity and zeal. No. Short as their companionship had been, he felt in many, many instances, that there was blame against himself. And still inquiring why, the curtain slowly rose a little more, and self, 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 dilated on the scene. It was long before he fixed the knowledge of himself so firmly in his mind that he could thoroughly discern the truth. But in the hideous solitude of that most hideous place, with hope so far removed, ambition quenched, and death beside him rattling at the very door, reflection came, as in a plague-beleaguered town. And so, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.